Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. So much to get into today. It's a very busy weekend. Local basketball picking up in a massive way. The Emory Spartan boys squad, they go 1-1. Thursday picked up a win, suffered a loss to Juan Diego on Saturday night in a fascinating contest. The Emory Lady Spartans, they also go 1-1. They pick up a win against Morgan, suffer a loss to Syracuse. And as far as the Carbon boys, they played one game. That was Friday night. Dominating performance against Baser Prep. 96-25. I mean, they were just dominant from the very, very beginning. Complete wrap-ups and recaps of those games are available right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Also, the Carbon Lady Dinos had a stellar performance. They traveled to the Shannon Johnson tournament in Uinta, and they did wonders as well. They come away a perfect 3-0. So it was a good weekend, I think, all the way around for both Carbon and Emory basketball. We are going to focus on Carbon today. We'll be joined by Coach Ted Bianco, also athletic director at Carbon High. I'm really curious. I'm really looking forward to this interview because I'm curious as to Coach Bianco's thoughts on how his girls performed. This is a team that lost a lot of seniors last year. They have two seniors on this year's team. But again, they played so well over the weekend, picking up three wins and doing so in fairly dominant fashion. So we'll talk to Coach Bianco about that. We'll give you the complete recap in just a few moments as well with the local sports update. Let's move over to the national scene. We have to talk college football today. Saturday, not a great night if you're a BYU fan. What does this mean for the Cougars? Win or lose, BYU was never going to be considered for the college football playoff. So if you're a Cougar fan, you can rest easy on that. At no point in time was BYU ever going to be considered a major or serious contender to get into the playoffs. However, with a rather weak schedule, and look, all BYU fans understand that the Cougars had a weak schedule. BYU fans are well aware of this. Okay? So with a loss and a weak schedule, what does this do for Zach Wilson in his Heisman candidacy? Does it hurt it? Yeah, I think it hurts it badly, to be honest with you. And look, I don't think that BYU fans are shocked by that. I don't think that BYU fans, they're probably a little let down. If you're a Cougar fan, you're a little let down after what happened on Saturday. But look, I still tip my hat to BYU taking that game on short notice. Had to travel on the road for it. And I will tell you, one of the things that stood out to me in that game was the lack of sportsmanship from Coastal Carolina. I couldn't get over that. Do I believe that they are a legitimate contender? No. Look, there are two teams that did exactly what they needed to do. They took care of their schedule up until Saturday, took care of the opponents on their schedule. I don't believe that either of those two teams that we saw on Saturday night would have a slither of hope against most, if not all, teams in the top 10 in the college football playoff rankings. I think it is what it is. I don't think the loss affected Zach Wilson as far as his draft stock, and we can talk about that a little bit later. That was the big story in the state of Utah as far as college football is concerned. The Utes also got their first victory of the year on Saturday night, although it was a journey, right? It was an adventure for Utah to pick up that W, but they found a way to do so. The Utes are finally in the win column. We'll talk college football a little bit later on in the show. We have NFL football going on right now. The Washington football team of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh still the last unbeaten squad, 11-0, playing another one of these afternoon games. It was kind of scary for for a little bit here if you're Pittsburgh. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's been fairly accurate, 14 of 20 for 114 yards and a touchdown. He just put one in the end zone a few moments ago, connecting with Deontay Johnson. But really, Washington hanging with Pittsburgh. Alex Smith, 5 for 9, 34 yards. Midway through the second quarter, Pittsburgh up 7-0. The Steelers are not a squad that's going to grab you style points. That's just not what they do. Am I a believer in the Steelers? A believer for what, I guess, is the question. Do I believe they're the best team in the NFL? No, I don't believe that. Do I believe that they're a contender? Absolutely. You win 11 games straight, you're a contender. I don't care who it's against. But they have their hands full right now with the Washington football team, and Washington is trying to keep pace right now in what's been a muddied race in the NFC East that the Giants have emerged as the front runners following a victory yesterday over the Seattle Seahawks. The Giants have now won four straight, and more impressively, they win yesterday with Colt McCoy under center. I think that's a storyline, and I think the NFC East, for all the jokes that have been made about the NFC East over the last 12, 13 weeks, I want to throw one specific stat out there for you, and that's this New York Giants defense and the amount of points that they have allowed so far this year. And I think it's the same thing with Washington, and we'll see what happens in this game with Pittsburgh. But through 12 games, the Giants have allowed 265 points. Let's just take a look at what some of the other teams through 12 games have given up. For instance, Seattle, the team that they beat yesterday, they've allowed 321. Okay, Green Bay has allowed more points than the Giants. The Buccaneers have allowed more points than the Giants. When you really get down to it, there are maybe two teams in the NFC that have been more consistent in not allowing points than New York. That's the Rams and the Saints. And that is basically it among contenders. So while the NFC East, it's been fun to poke at, we've looked at it and said, boy, this is a terrible division. I don't know what the Giants finish out. I don't know what the Washington football team finishes out. I think we can throw Philly and Dallas out of the equation. But the Giants have won four in a row. And it's the same logic that I just used with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Are we looking at style points? In the NFL, style points don't matter. We don't have a selection committee. But they beat Washington, they beat Philadelphia, they beat Cincinnati. You look at those three wins, you say big deal. Then they beat Seattle at Seattle. And over the next 4 weeks, they get the Cardinals, they get the Browns, the Ravens, and the Cowboys. I could see them going 2-2. That puts them at 7-9. I could see them going 3-1. It puts them at 8-8. And are we going to look at the NFC East as a joke if a team gets in with an 8-8 record? I'm just starting to see some improvements. And Joe Judge done a tremendous job in New York, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the week. He's been phenomenal. Really, he has. When you look at where the Giants are right now, from where they were at and doing this with a backup quarterback, I tip my hat to the Giants. Really, I think that was really the story yesterday. Outside of the Patriots just destroying the Los Angeles Chargers, that was probably the best story on Sunday, in my mind, the Giants stopping the Seahawks. Some other news coming out of the NFL. We'll stick with the NFC East. Cowboys All-Pro guard Zach Martin could be done for the season with a calf injury. More issues for Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys. And in New York, yes, there was a coach fired today, but it wasn't Adam Gase. It was Greg Williams, defensive coordinator, sent six. He blitzed. He sent six rushers at Derek Carr yesterday on one of the final plays of the game. Left an undrafted rookie on Henry Ruggs, one of the fastest on the outside of the NFL. Ruggs burns him, takes it to the house. Raiders win 31-28. Jets still winless. Adam Gase obviously not amused with Greg Williams' decision. And someone went through and did a next-gen statistic on this. It was an historically odd call to blitz in that situation. Next-gen stats are incredible. And I think you can take it a step further. There are people like myself that get bored and you go back and you look at certain situations. Over the last 250 teams that were in that position that the Jets were in yesterday, one has sent six at the quarterback, and that was Greg Williams. 250. That's a once-in-a-lifetime call that we saw yesterday from Greg Williams. He sent the house. It didn't work out. Raiders get the win right here on KOAL. and the Jets are now looking for a new defensive coordinator. We have a lot to get into on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to be off and rolling in just a few moments. Let's pause for a quick commercial break. Local sports recap coming up. Plus, Coach Ted Bianco will join us when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. It was a very busy weekend for high school basketball, and we will begin with the Emory Spartans. The boys basketball team dipped to 1-1 on the season with a 71-54 loss to the Juan Diego Soarin' Eagles at home. Emory entered the contest looking to improve to 2-0 following a win over American Heritage on Thursday. Despite a competitive contest for three quarters, Juan Diego pulled away in the fourth to pick up the 17-point win. Emory trailed 52-48 at the end of the third quarter, but failed to convert a field goal in the final 8 minutes. Despite the loss, the Spartans were led by Trevin Brazier's 12 points, Riggs Griffin chipped in with 10 points, and Luke Stilson finished with 7. Emory will have an opportunity to rebound when they return to the court at home on Wednesday against the Union Cougars. Live coverage of Wednesday's non-region tilt will begin at 6:30 p.m., followed by tip-off at 7. We move over to Carbon High School, and the boys' basketball team started off Coach Jared Butler's second season at the helm with a bang as they bulldozed past Mazer Prep 96-25. Carbon held complete control of this contest throughout the night. They were led by senior Preston Condi, who poured in a game-high 31 points to go along with 6 rebounds. Senior Keenan Hatch finished with 12 points and 12 boards, recording a double-double. Max Lancaster chipped in with 11, and Chet Anderson scored 10. Now that Friday's contest is in the books, Carbon will prepare for what will be a very busy week. It will begin Wednesday with a lengthy road trip to take on the Delta Rabbits. Remember to continue to follow the Carbon Dinos all season long with play-by-play calls on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. We move over to girls basketball, and the Emory Lady Spartans participated in not one but two games over the weekend as they traveled to the Morgan Winter Classic. On Friday, Emory was victorious 63-34. Bailey Jacobson led the way with 16 points, while Bethany Justice scored 14, and Tambry Tuttle chipped in with 11. Emory was unable to finish the weekend 2-0. They suffered a 64-33 loss the following day on Saturday to Syracuse. In the blowout loss, Emory was led by Dacey Ungerman. She scored 11 points. Addie Lester finished with 8. Emory will now take the next couple of days off before returning to the court with a road trip on Thursday to meet Judge Memorial. And the Carbon Lady Dinos finished the weekend a perfect 3-0 with the Shannon Johnson tournament in Uinta. Following a 64-35 win over South Summit on Thursday, the Lady Dinos defeated the home squad Uinta 40-32 on Friday. Sydney Orth led the way in the victory. She scored a game-high 10 points. Saturday, Carbon finished off the successful weekend with a blowout 45-28 win over Wasatch Academy. Carbon led 17-5 at the end of the first quarter and cruised through the remainder of the game. The Lady Dinos were led by McKenna Blank. The senior scored a game-best 18 points. Maddie Orth and Sydney Orth each chipped in with 7. Carbon will look to move to 4-0 when they return to the court tomorrow. They will take on the North Stampede Hawks. Tip-off for that game is scheduled for 7 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk high school basketball here on the Coach's Corner. Yet it was a very busy weekend. We had both Carbon and Emory tipping off the seasons last week. The Carbon Lady Dinos played 3 games in 3 days, and they picked up victories in all 3 of those games as they traveled to the Shannon Johnson tournament in Uinta. It's a competitive tournament. Coach Bianco got to see his new team up against other competition, and it is a new team. I mean, this squad lost a lot of seniors last year, only 2 seniors returning to this year's team. We're going to talk about that and more right now with Coach Ted Bianco, who is joining us over the phone. And Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Definitely, Coach. I know we have a lot to talk about. The season is finally here. It's underway, and the Lady Dinos got off to a great start this past weekend, traveling to the Shannon Johnson Tournament. You guys come back with a perfect 3-0 record, and as you and I were talking off the cuff, you were happy with the way the girls performed and maybe even a little bit surprised.
Well, we only had basically four practices coming into that tournament, so I was a little bit nervous about how we were going to play because of the fact that, you know, we haven't really had a lot of practice time together. But I was really, really pleased with how they came out, and the effort they gave on the defensive end of the floor really helped them have the success they had. So they, at all three levels, they all did a fantastic job. We got a lot of new girls in the program, and it went really well. So hopefully the rest of the season continues to go that way.
You mentioned so many new girls in the program. I mean, you only returned two seniors. And Coach, that senior group last year, they played together for so long. And, boy, they just really meshed, specifically on the defensive end of the floor. Was that the biggest worry for you, being a cohesive unit defensively, knowing that that's kind of the identity that you guys have built?
I think for me as a coach, probably the hardest thing that you deal with on a yearly basis is when you have a new point guard running your team. And, you know, for the last 3 years, we've had the same point guard that's been running the show with, you know, except for when she's on the bench, of course. But it just, excuse me, makes a big difference when you start all over, because you have to make that adjustment as a coach. I don't know if other coaches feel that same way. It's just, it's different. The feel is different. And it's been that way with every team that I've coached. And I felt like our girls that stepped into that role of being the point guard really handled that leadership responsibility extremely well. I thought Janzi did a fantastic job, and all the girls that came in for her did an excellent job also. So that was my biggest worry, is that person that's going to be running the show on the floor going to be able to deal with, you know, communicating with the rest of the team on what we're doing, and are they going to be able to get the ball in the right place? Are they going to read what the defense is doing? Are they going to be able to see those keys to attack differently on both ends of the floor? And like I said, that to me was the thing that I was probably most pleased with, is how our young ladies came out, and they accepted their role, and they played awesome in all three games. So I don't have any complaints. I mean, there's obviously some things we've got to work on. We made our share of mistakes, but for the most part, I was very pleased.
Well, let's talk about some of these games, Coach. 64-35 win over South Summit. Going over the box score in this game, you guys were lights out offensively in the first half. I mean, if you score 64, 65 points in a contest, you're obviously doing something right on that end of the court. But defensively, you guys had one particular quarter where you really shined in this contest, and that kind of allowed this game to become one-sided.
Well, they have two girls on their team that can shoot the ball quite well, and so we started putting some focus on that, and they really didn't get any shots off against us, and I thought we rebounded the ball extremely well in that game and pushed the floor. That game was obviously our best shooting game, and it was also the game that we got out and ran the floor well, and that's a goal. If we get a rebound or steal, we want to run the floor and finish at the other end, and I thought that we did the best job of that in our first game of the season, and that for me was a great way to start the year off. And our shooting percentage at halftime, I think we were 50% from the field and 55% from the 3-point line, and if you would have told me that, I probably would have said there's no way. But they come out and they were, like you said, they were on fire, and they did exactly what they needed to do. And in that second quarter in particular, we really shot the ball well in that second quarter and didn't give them a chance to really get good looks at the basket, and that helped us a ton.
Once you defeat a team by 30 points, Coach, and obviously you're on the road and there's no distractions, right, because these girls should be focused on everything that's in front of them, you come back against Uinta, and this was a competitive game. And I'm sure from a coach's standpoint, to see two separate ends of the spectrum, how the girls can perform and put a team away early, and how the girls can perform in a game that's tight throughout and still come out on top. I'm sure you probably learned just as much in this game as you did that first game.
I liked the second game a little bit better because it showed some character that we had. I mean, it's hard to show a lot of what the character of your team's going to be like in a blowout win. You know, in that first game, we were getting steals and different things like that. Well, in the second game, the competition was a little bit better. They were a little more physical. They were a little bit bigger, and they were on their home court. And I really, really thought that our kids stepped up to every challenge that was given to them. It was a back and forth game in the first quarter. I think we were up at one point by 4 points at the most. And they come and they took a 4-point lead against us. We went through a stretch where we did not score, and we really buckled down on the defensive end of the floor. We got in passing lanes. We were boxing out well, getting rebounds, and we didn't lose our composure. And it was totally different than what I saw this summer when we get down. We kind of lost our composure. We didn't rebound well. We didn't rebound from being down very well, and we didn't have that killer attitude like we normally do. And in that particular game, I thought we showed a lot of what our character needs to be the entire season.
And then after this game against Uinta, Coach, you guys close it out with a victory over Wasatch Academy. And regardless of the competition that Wasatch Academy possessed in this game, you guys took care of business and you won 3 games in 3 days, which is never easy to do.
Absolutely. And that last game was probably the hardest game because our legs weren't as fresh and we were a little bit tired and we sat around all day. And that's tough to get motivated to play and you're in an empty gym. And we came out a little bit sluggish in that game. We were struggling to score some points, and we kind of threw a little bit of a press on them and created some turnovers, got ourselves going. And once we got ourselves going, we really never looked back. So it's a totally different team this year. The kids are working hard. They're being coachable. They're doing what we're asking. And probably what I'm most impressed with is how well they're playing together, and that's something we need to do for the entire season if we want to have success.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ted Bianco with the Garvin Lady Dino basketball team. Coach, if we talk about some of the individuals over this past weekend that really shined, we can start with the two seniors, who, of course, will get a lot of playing time for you. But McKenna Blank rebounded the ball so well over the course of the weekend. And we know that she's an aggressive girl. I'm sure this is exactly what you expect from her, I would think.
Well, she was our leading rebounder last year as a junior also. And she just crashes the boards hard. She's physical. She's aggressive on both ends of the floor. She had her best offensive output Saturday against Wasatch Academy. She's always a threat, and that's something that we need throughout the year. And then Alex Cartwright, she's kind of an undersized post for us, but she really did a good job of rebounding. I believe she scored the first bucket of each of our games. She just sneaks into an open area, catches it, and she has that little put back that's really, really quick. She took a couple charges for us in this tournament, which we need that out of her as much as possible. I was very pleased with Alex's performance, and if she'll keep up that aggressiveness and that hustle out there, it'll help us a ton.
With such a young team, Coach, what have you asked of these two seniors, McKenna and Alex, moving forward?
The biggest thing with seniors is they got to be good role models and leaders on the team, and I feel like both of them have done an excellent job with that. And it's not just with what they say, it's how they play and their body language and different things like that. And they did an awesome job this weekend. They've been great in practices. But we've had a lot of young girls that have stepped into those roles too, which I don't look at a basketball team. You can't really look at a basketball team anymore as your juniors, your seniors, or sophomores, because the numbers fluctuate so much every year. So what I look for as a coach, I'm looking for kids that want to be leaders on the court with each other, that want to work together and talk to each other. And this group is just doing a very good job with that, for sure.
Again, 3 games already under your belt. Great way to start off the season. And now, Coach, you guys can gear up for a game tomorrow. You'll take on North St. Pete. It's a home contest. It's the first opportunity for the community to get to see, well, I guess not even the community because of the restrictions, but it's the first opportunity for these girls to play on their home court in front of some hometown fans. It also begins a long stretch of home games for you guys.
Well, and it's kind of nice this year to have some home games. We have 10 home games this year. The unfortunate part is the community really can't come out and watch, but I know it will be live streamed, and I'm not sure which of those games are going to actually be broadcast on TV with announcers and such. But it is nice that we are at home where we don't have to get on the road and travel and learn how to play some home games for a change. Usually at this time of the year, we're on the road for like our first 2 or 3 weeks of the season. And this year just happened to turn out the way it did, namely because of the Fruita tournament being canceled. So that was a letdown, but it's turned into a positive for us.
And there's been so much talk, Coach, about playing in front of very little people or no people at all in empty gyms, as you just alluded to in the game against Wasatch Academy. How different is that for not only the girls, but for you as a coach as well? I mean, I would assume it's a big difference.
Well, they can hear me.
Yeah.
I have to try and yell over the fans so they can hear everything I say, which is a good thing most of the time. The bad thing about it is the officials can hear what you say most of the time too. So, but like I said, it was weird, but it's that way at summer camps too. So our kids are kind of used to that. It is a challenge. Kids want to play in front of their friends and their family. They're getting to play in front of part of their family if their family's available to come watch them. And we're living in crazy times right now, and hopefully that changes. But if it doesn't, at least the kids are getting a chance to play. And I think that's what this is all about right now, is we want to be able to take advantage of every game we can play, because we never know when it's going to get shut down again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Does it zap home court advantage, Coach? Do you think, I mean, I know that it was a tournament, it was a weekend tournament. You got a lot of teams playing on neutral sites, but do you believe that will zap home court moving forward?
I think it's going to hurt teams. It's going to hurt us, because we have a great student section that come and support the girls. It's obviously, I mean, I wish they could be there, but we will make do, and we will, you know, continue to play. The other thing with that is the other team doesn't really have any fans there either. One thing that we will have is hopefully the drill team and the cheer squad will be out there supporting us, and that always makes a big difference. So those two groups do an awesome job of supporting all of our athletes, and we'll look forward to having them there also. So it's something that I think we'll make the best of it. And we will continue to work hard every game, regardless of who's there to watch us play.
Well, definitely a great way to start off the season. Coach Ted Bianco, a pleasure to get you back on. Best of luck tomorrow, and I know we'll catch up again real soon, Coach. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it too. Thanks, Jordan.
We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move to the national side of things. Again, I want to talk college football. BYU, if they had a slither of a hope of getting into the postseason, that went out the window on Saturday night. We'll take a look at the new AP and coaches top 25 and the playoff picture as we're gearing up now for conference championship weekends. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports. One of the most morbidly entertaining scenarios in a college football season in the state of Utah. It's BYU fans just reveling in the idea that Utah isn't very good or Utah can't play, and Utah fans doing the exact same thing to BYU. See, I have no dog in the fight. If you've listened to this show long enough, you understand that. Utah, BYU, I respect both schools. I see pros and cons to both. You know, if I take my sports analyst hat off and I put my fanhood hat on, okay. I mean, honestly, I have no dog in this fight. None whatsoever. And you don't have to be heavily into sports to know that BYU and Utah, they just don't like each other. The fan bases love to poke one another. And the Utah fan base was poking BYU heavily on Saturday night. In fact, I even saw one statistic pop up on Twitter. It was something along the lines of, BYU has not secured a win the same week that Utah has. Something along the lines of that. Let's look at this scenario realistically from a BYU standpoint. I don't think it's all bad that you lost to Coastal Carolina. A win might have just set BYU up for even more disappointment. And this is the reason why I say that. The College Football Playoff Committee was not impressed with the Cougars. They were not impressed with the resume or the style points that they had accumulated leading up to the first rankings. BYU decided that they would play it safe with Washington. They were going to take a step back, and they were going to see if they needed to add a game on short notice. I don't think BYU was wrong in that regard. Turns out, yeah, they needed to add another game. So the Cougars are getting no love from the committee. They earn my respect for taking a game 48 hours before kickoff and agreeing to get in a plane and fly over 2,000 miles. Think about that. In what other sport, in what other realm, would any team even consider doing that? Now, you fans can make the argument they had no choice, they had to do it. Yeah, if they wanted to get into a New Year's Day Six Bowl, they needed to win this game. Still, BYU could have played it safe. They could have said no. They could have beat San Diego State next week, finished unbeaten, and then played the victim card. played the, well, all we did is what we could do card. They didn't do that. They added a game, and we got to see a thrilling game on Saturday night as well. I didn't get to watch it live. I had to go back and watch it again because we had an Emory High School basketball game. But when I went back and I watched it, this was a game that was viewed by a lot of people, and if you read the reviews on it, a lot of praise as well. One of the best games of the season. Think about this. What's the best college football game you've seen all year? For me, hands down, Notre Dame-Clemson. That game was incredible. It was maddening, but it was incredible. That was probably number one. Number two? Yeah, you got me. Indiana-Penn State? BYU-Coastal Carolina? It's right there. It was one of the best games of the year. It wasn't the best game of the year, but it was one of the best games of the year. And when you look at the ramifications behind it as well, it will be it'll be noted as one of the top games that we've seen all season long. And of course, it was heartbreaking for one squad, and that adds to the excitement around it. Here's how it could have been worse for BYU. BYU could have went on national TV and gotten blown out by a team that I still believe they are better than. Coastal Carolina has to be ranked higher than them. But I believe if all things were equal, BYU would top Coastal Carolina. I think a lot of people believe that. If Coastal Carolina would have traveled to BYU in 48 hours, traveling over 2,000 miles, it changes the dynamics of everything. Could have been worse for BYU. Admirable effort. Went out, had an opportunity to win the game, and now you can close out with a victory over San Diego State. You're going to be top 15 of the AP poll. You take that for BYU because literally 2.5 months ago, we were sitting here and we didn't know if the Cougars would even have a season. Here they are now, top 15. It's okay. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. And even if BYU wins this game on Saturday, if you're a Cougar fan, you're going to hang your hat on it. You beat a top 20 team. You know, you just made, the Cougars just made another case for you in your mind as to why they should be in a New Year's Day Six Bowl. I still don't think they would have gotten there. I really don't. I don't think BYU had anything to lose in this game. And that's why when I sit back and I see all the comments from Utah U fans, win or lose, you weren't going to give BYU the respect anyway. I mean, let's be real. BYU was undefeated at this point in time, a 9-0 record, and the only logical knock was they have played nobody, even though they beat Boise State, they beat Navy. I didn't know how they were going to fare against Navy. There were a couple of games that I could give BYU full credit for. Had BYU won on Saturday, U fans weren't going to give them the credit anyway. I don't think the national media was going to give them the credit. If they beat Coastal Carolina, I could be sitting here right now saying Coastal Carolina was only 18 in the country because of the pandemic. BYU wasn't going to get credit for that game. The idea that that game came down to the wire, it was entertaining, it was a Saturday night contest, and the story behind it taking place or coming together in 50 hours, 48 hours before kickoff, that's what adds to the mystique of that game that we saw on Saturday night. I tip my hat to BYU for playing that game. Now, with that being said, BYU, who was never in the college football playoff picture to begin with, they did have Zach Wilson, at least in the conversation for a Heisman Trophy. He will not be a finalist for the Heisman. He won't. In fact, I can tell you who the finalists are going to be, because this is the way college football works. The Heisman Trophy has turned into a quarterback award. So Mac Jones, who has been dynamic from Alabama and would probably get my vote for the Heisman, will get an invite. Kyle Trask of Florida, who has also been great, will get an invite. And you'll probably see Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. Zach Wilson isn't going. I'll tell you who I would invite. If I could pick the four finalists for the Heisman Trophy, if I could pick four finalists right now, Jones and Trask, no question. But you know who doesn't get any sort of publicity for Alabama? It's Devontae Smith. And here's a kid that had 8 catches for 231 yards and 3 touchdowns in this win over LSU on Saturday. In 9 games, he's got 1,300 yards and 15 touchdowns. He'd be a Heisman finalist. And Ian Book of Notre Dame would be a Heisman finalist. I'm not saying that Ian Book should win the Heisman. I'm saying that this kid has now won 30 games. Twice he has taken Notre Dame to an undefeated regular season. And he had arguably his best game of the year. Plus, he beat the number one team in the country. Those would be my four final my finalists for the Heisman, no doubt. And as far as the winner of the Heisman, it's going to end up being Mac Jones because Alabama has steamrolled everyone that they have played up to this point in time. But Devontae Smith may be the most electrifying player in college football right now. However, the Heisman Trophy is simply turned in to the best quarterback. That's what it's turned into, Quarterback of the Year Award. Let's take a quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move over to talk NFL football right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Step away from college football. We'll talk more in the next couple of days as far as the college ranks are concerned. NFL update going into halftime, Pittsburgh and Washington. It's a two-score lead right now for the Steelers. 11-0 Pittsburgh. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this segment. Help close out the show. Travis, when you look at Pittsburgh, you buying it? You buying the Steelers at 11-0?
No, not yet. I just can't. I just don't trust that team, I think, in a playoff scenario. I think I wouldn't be shocked if they lost their first playoff game, you know, coming into that divisional round.
Yeah, but when you win 11 games, and they're going to win today against Washington.
Yeah, 12-0.
You're going to be 12-0. You're legit. When that happens, you're legit. I don't think there's any question. Tonight's game, Buffalo-San Francisco, I got a lot of questions that need to be answered in this game. I believe Buffalo's a legitimate contender in the AFC. I don't have any question. San Francisco, on the other hand, they're about finished, and we know that.
They're playing better, but yeah, like you said, with the Rams winning yesterday, that's the Rams' division to lose now. They're in control of that division. But like you said, Buffalo is a contender in the AFC, and I wouldn't want to play Buffalo because defensively, they're very good.
Okay, with all that being said, I want to talk about your New York Jets, who find another way. It's almost comical. I mean, this is a team that finds ways. It's comical because I sit in this seat, and I'm typically looking across at one of two people, you or Vinny. And every week, your teams find a new way to lose a game.
Look, I told you this team was going to go 0-16 last year.
I know.
And this year, I told you they were going to go 0-16. And somehow, I got you to talk me into this team was going to win some games.
I said they could win four or five games. Why not? I laugh at the idea that You two root for the most snake-bit franchises in the NFL. I don't think there's any question about it. And for those who didn't see it yesterday, Greg Williams, former defensive coordinator for your New York football Jets, calls a blitz. It was the first time in like 250 scenarios that it's cover zero over the top. No nope. Safety help, not playing the goal line. Man-to-man coverage on the outside. Henry Ruggs, one of the top drafted wide receivers against an undrafted free agent who bites on a double move. Ruggs walks into the end zone. Raiders win. Now, look, if you're a Jet fan, yeah, good for you, because Jacksonville's not going to give you any help. Jacksonville may end up going 1-15, and at this point in time, what are you playing for?
Yeah, Jacksonville has the strength of schedule, so if the Jets would have won yesterday, they would have dropped to 2.
Right.
No way they would have catch Jacksonville for the 1, so yeah, tank on.
Well, you say tank on, but you know who doesn't say tank on? Players on this year's team. Adam Gase isn't saying tank on. I mean, Adam Gase wants to win games, and I don't know that Adam Gase, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Adam Gase is gone. I really don't think it is.
Yeah, Christopher Johnson loves him, so you might be right.
I mean, can we sit here right now? You look at Matt Patricia has been fired.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Quinn has been fired.
Yep.
Can you sit here right now with 100% certainty say that Adam Gase is going to be back next year?
The more and more that I sit here and the more and more this plays out, I think they bring him back.
I think they may as well, right? So you got to look at all of that. I mean, yes, as a fan, you're saying tank on, go 0-16. You want to join the Lions and the Browns for, God, when you go 16 weeks, you can't even accidentally win a game.
Yeah, I hope
they
lose.
Can't even accidentally win
a game.
Well,
they're not going to win because they play Seattle, they play the Rams, they play the Patriots, and they play the Browns. They're not winning.
Yeah, they may go 0-16.
Yeah, they will.
Greg Williams gets fired today. Should he have been fired? And look, I don't blame him for sending a blitz. Let me just get that out of there right now. I've always said that one of the worst things you can do is only rush two or three. How many times Aaron Rodgers has made how many Hail Mary throws? How many times has this happened, right?
Four, three, four.
Okay. How many times has Aaron Rodgers had three or four guys rush, three minimum or maximum rush him in those Hail Mary situations? How many times?
Yeah, probably four.
Every time.
Every time. He's got a clean pocket to step up, move around, avoid all the tackles, and just fire.
Okay, so
send everybody.
Greg Williams yesterday sent six. Problem is he didn't protect the goal line. I can't sit here and say that Greg Williams should have been fired. I can sit here and say I'd have never hired Greg Williams to begin with because I don't even think this guy should be in the league based off what happened in New Orleans. So I'm not sad that this guy's gone at all. However, the fact that Adam Gase decided to fire him today tells me that there's a chance Adam Gase comes back next year. That's damage control is what that is.
You don't give that much power to somebody if you're going to fire him at the end of the season, right?
I don't think you do.
So, yeah, that kind of tells you that maybe Adam Gase comes back.
Is that the worst loss yesterday? Because tomorrow we're going to catch up with Vinny on Football Tuesday, and his Chargers looked awful yesterday. I mean, they got blitzed 45-0. Pun intended, based off of what we were just talking about with the Jets and Raiders. But that was awful yesterday. What was the worst loss on Sunday?
Probably the Jets.
I still got to say Seattle.
Seattle.
I think Seattle's the worst loss.
You can't lose at home to the Giants.
I think that's the worst loss.
With Colt McCoy.
You can talk about the way the Raiders won this game and the Jets losing. We can talk about the way that the Chargers lost this game. Look, the fact of the matter is, Chargers were underdogs yesterday. Yeah, they lost by 45 points. It's still a loss. Right, the Raiders, I think that was 7.5 they were favored by. They found a way to get a win.
Yeah.
Seattle had the NFC West.
That's gone now.
Now they have to beat the Rams. That's a bad matchup. They've proven that over the course of the last, three, 4 years under Sean McVay. He's had success against Seattle. That was the worst loss of Sunday. Hands down, no question. I don't care what the final score of the Charger-Patriot game was. I don't care how the Jets lost. The worst loss of Sunday was the Seahawks losing at home to Colt McCoy.
Well, Seattle's defense has been crap all year, and that's going to be the downfall of the Seahawks is their defense. So
that's a primer for what we'll talk about on the show tomorrow. Football Tuesday, that's coming up tomorrow here on Drive Time Sports. Halftime score for you. Washington football team gets on the board. They trail Pittsburgh 14-3. Nightcap tonight coming up at 6:15. It's Buffalo and San Francisco. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.